Tenk deg at du skader kneet på en alpetur med jentene. En all-you-can-eat strudelbuffet hjelper litt. IF hjelper mye. Velkommen til IF-forsikring.
Gratulerer med dagen, damer. Jeg heter Helle Stenkløv, og Jernverket markerer kvinnedagen med et Girl School-intervju fra Muskelrock 2017. Bra gjeng!
Hi, we're Girl School, and you're listening to Jernverket! Cheers!
We got chocolate and the beer on. We're happy now.
I remember this now. This is Enid. This is where Thor was. I'm going to keep telling everybody.
Oh, okay.
And we and remember it. This was exactly the same.
Would you like a drink?
Yeah. Yes, please. Did you want, this is my last interview for today. So.
Did you should we move the cushion?
Okay.
I was going to say, did you want all of us?
Let me have a little more room.
Yeah.
Helen, did you want all of us or just two?
Is this beer?
Yeah. Will those two be okay? Just easy.
No, if you don't want to talk, that's
no,
okay.
No, I might shout from here.
Yeah, you
can. Can we shout from here? Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
There's no room for all of us up there.
Yeah, there is.
Of course it is. I can just move this.
Today's coming
down here.
Come on.
Laser
cat. Okie dokie. You can sit next to chocolate with me and I won't eat it all.
Yeah, I know. It's alright, hang on.
I'm gonna have one of these caramel things.
Awesome!
But
this is. I'm sitting here with Girl School and they're eating chocolate.
Yeah, we don't rock and roll.
We don't drink anymore. Well, we can't eat our pudding. It's our pudding. Just had dinner, now it's pudding.
So, why don't we just start at the beginning, each one of you, to tell me who you are and what you do in the band?
Hi, I'm Kim, and I try and get away with as little as possible. No, I sing and play rhythm guitar.
Hi, I'm Denise, and I'm the drummer.
And she tries to get away with
less than possible.
Yeah.
I'm Jackie. I'm lead guitar,
and she does nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, the vocalist and bass.
So you do everything then?
Yeah. No. Yeah, quite a bit. Yeah.
Nothing. Nobody does anything.
Minus.
quite the contrary.
So let's start from the beginning. How did Girl School become a band? And when did this happen?
When's that going to happen?
It was about 40 years ago.
No.
Well, the
Girl
School.
Oh, yeah, it was actually, yeah.
Oh, well, basically, Enid and I grew up in the same street. And ever since we were little, we were into music. And basically, we just loved music and wanted to be in a band. And all the guys that we knew that were actually playing and in bands didn't want girls in the band. So we had no choice but to find other girls that wanted to play, you know, like-minded, which we did.
And you formed a band called NEMA.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was going way back. Enid knows more dates than I do.
I think we've got that much detail.
Okay. No. Yeah, we did mostly covers.
We went through various lineups and, we had quite a following, but we did mostly covers. And then after a couple of years, we got Kelly joined the band. And then Denise came along and she said, oh, I want to change the name and... So it kind of, one band became the next, really.
Yeah, but basically we had a covers band called Painted Lady, which way after we first started, because basically we first started, we played the local youth club and stuff like that, you know, when we were really young, and then just progressed bit by bit. And then, as Enid said, we got quite a following with this female covers band. Again, we were only girls, really, because we couldn't find any guys that wanted to actually play in a band with girls at that time.
Yeah,
because you know, it was a long time. We're talking like, you know, 70s, late 70s, early 70s.
No, late 70s.
And
75. Yeah.
And of course, this is before punk came along. Obviously, when punk came along, it became more acceptable for women or anybody to get up and do whatever they wanted. So. You know, that's,
But
we were there before that.
Yeah, when we started playing, we got laughed at because everyone was saying, girls don't play. Well, and we said, we're going to do what we like. No, you did. a few months later, the Runaways came along with a single, but but they were American, and before then there'd been a couple of bands, Fanny and Bertha, but America was like Mars to us, because we didn't travel so much in those days. And so we said, well, we want to do this, and so we went and did it. But like Kim said, sort of with punk, 76, 77, suddenly hundreds of girls started picking up instruments and forming bands, and a few years later they were all gone again. Mm. But it was very much that kind of time.
But in 1978, we became Girls' School, and it all started.
Yeah.
It's when we hit the road and we got an agent.
And started writing our own material and being a proper band, you know. So,
And you just continued while all the other girl bands, they disappeared throughout the years.
There's obviously something wrong with us.
Yeah. 40 years and never split up.
And that's also kind of weird. Don't girls quarrel and chatter a lot?
I mean, 10 different members in all that time, so it's pretty good. These two have been it right from the beginning,
all the way through.
So all 40 years these two have done.
God.
Definitely get less for murder.
But as I'm a girl myself, I'm kind of I'm kind of curious about how you've felt the change from it not being okay for girls to play, and now when nobody really cares anymore, everyone can play. I can't feel that the same. Like, stop your girl, like you did probably in the beginning.
Yeah.
How has this had an impact on you as a band?
Well, I think basically at the beginning we just didn't really, I didn't really notice too much of it. We just did it because we loved doing it. Mm. So we just got on with it, do you know what I mean? Mm. I don't think we really came up. When we'd play with other bands on the road, we didn't seem to be treated any different. So as far as I was concerned, it was we were always like one of the boys anyway, you know, one of the lads. So but this was obviously in the 80s. Well, as we went on, but it was only really at the beginning, the sexism thing I found, because basically it was boys didn't want to play with girls. It was simple as that, because girls didn't do that. It was it wasn't the norm then.
But it's also changed a lot in the last few years, because when Pink had a band of women behind her and really hot musicians, and Beyoncé did the same thing, and of course Bowie had a female bass player who was brilliant, and so did Robbie Williams.
And Prince had a female drummer.
Yeah, Prince, that's true, yeah. And that was a lot earlier. Mm. But things have changed beyond belief.
But I read a story that you actually, is this correct, that you were removed from the poster or a festival or whatever because they already had a girl band?
Yeah. They just didn't book us.
They never used to have...
And it was in Sweden.
They didn't want two female bands on the same
It's a bit like they have the token female band, and that's it, you know. Yeah. You can't possibly have two female bands.
It's still a gimmick. It's a gimmick almost. Yeah. It's kind of tragic.
I mean, how many female bands were at this festival?
The only one. Yeah. Yeah. But there are a lot of females in the band.
Yeah.
Good. Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, well, there you go then. Yeah.
But
you don't have to be a female band.
No, you don't.
Because these days you can mix it up. Exactly. You know,
and there are a lot of mixed bands here.
Yeah.
Like,
it's girl, better. Like, really.
Yeah. And girl bands are still rare. Yeah. And yeah. I don't know why.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, if you mix it up, there's no point having a female band.
You don't have to be female band anymore. No. Yeah. So,
but we did used to wonder why there's not as many as we thought there would be.
Yeah,
it's weird. They all disappeared. Mm. You know,
the chances of having four women that all like the same music and all want to do the same thing seems silly to just keep it female for the sake of it.
Mm. Yeah, these days.
Yes, you never.
We had no choice in the old days because, obviously, as we said, we couldn't. You know, that's the only way we could form a band. But these days, you don't have to have all girls. Yeah.
So you never thought about putting in a guy?
Well, we did a few
times. Yeah, we did at one point. Yeah, we had my boyfriend in, didn't we, at one point?
Yeah, playing when, the guitar.
When Kelly couldn't make it, she was still, she went to, had to go
somewhere.
I can't remember where she went.
But and came
to Athens. Yeah, we had this gig in Athens, this festival,
then,
with Motorhead, funny enough.
Like Kelly,
but the funny thing is, he was tall, blonde, and had the same sort of hairdo.
So people thought it was Kelly.
And people at the back still have thought, and thought it was Kelly. But the girls at the front, because he was pretty gorgeous, they were all just looking at him like this. We thought, oh, this is pretty good, actually. We're catering for everybody here.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
But through 40 years, there's been 12 albums?
13.
13 now?
Yeah.
Which one is your least favourite album?
Running Wild.
That was a quick answer.
There's some good songs on that album, but we don't really class
it. We didn't
it as
like
a
the lineup. No, it's not a line.
And that was a five piece as well.
So it wasn't really Girls' School. No. We should have changed the name for that one and done it as a separate project.
School Girls, we should have called it.
Yeah, I'd say that one as well.
I don't really got a least one after that.
Yeah.
I like Take a Bite. There's some good stuff on that.
Yeah, there's good stuff on that.
Head Over Heels, nice, bloody good tracks. Yeah.
Least, we're going for least.
Yeah, least. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I can't think of it. I can't think of a least.
They're all good.
Yeah, aren't they? Exactly. They've all got something. Maple Cross, I love Nightmare at Maple Cross.
I love that too. Yeah.
That was back. We went back with our old producer for that one,
Vic Mayo. Yeah,
that was great. Good songs in that. Yeah, so. I think they've all got their good points.
Yeah.
I don't like that one much.
Yeah. Yeah. We're
just
saying
something. She don't like half of them because she's not on them.
No, that's not the reason. I like
the ones you're on. Just say the least one that you're on.
Well, no, I was going to say the Play Dirty. It was one that some people love it and some people hate it.
I love that.
And in Europe and Britain, it was seen as like a complete change. No.
So you're not really thinking to have your opinion on that one because we were on it.
well, yeah.
And we love that album.
Yeah, we do.
No, but I was saying that some people loved it and some people hated it.
But we love it. You know, the people that were in the band at that time love it.
Yeah.
We all loved it. Yeah.
But how have you been working with the songwriting? How do you sit down and put out a song out there and then it becomes an album?
Well, it's changed over the years. Actually, we come to now singing stuff down the phone at each other.
I've got a little studio at home, so I tended to sit there and jam a few songs and send them to Kim and Edith.
Yeah.
And then she'd be singing little bits down the phone and went, oh, okay, I got that. Okay, let me just pop some music to that.
And then one time when we were recording our Legacy album, we had Lemmy on the phone on the end of the phone in LA, and we were literally screaming down the phone at him. He's going, what? He's going, all right,
It sounded like this song. That's what we were singing.
That was one way of writing a song, anyway.
That was hilarious.
It turned out good, actually. Didn't it?
But how did you get to know Lemmy so well? Did you live in the same neighborhood?
How did all this
stuff come up? The collaboration with Motorhead.
Well, we had a single out on an independent label that we did really early on. And because with punk, of course, you didn't just get bands starting up, you had labels and it was a whole DIY attitude. And John Peel picked it up and he played it on the radio. Motorhead's manager heard it and suggested us, and Lemmy came down to rehearsal.
Just to
love
see
the band.
If we could play.
Yeah, but I mean, basically the thing was that Motorhead were just about to do their first major British tour and they were looking for a support band. Probably that was a bit different as well, you know, because they were a crossover band as well, really, between the punk and heavy metal, which we found sort of we were as well, because we'd play punk clubs and they'd think we were heavy metal. We'd play heavy metal clubs and they think we thought we were punks.
Yeah.
So we were in the same sort of crossover type band. And when they heard this single, they thought obviously we'd, and the fact that we were girls as well, you know, obviously Lemmy being Lemmy, he thought, oh, right, let's go check them out. And of course, as soon as he walked in, we just got on and they invited us on the tour. And then their management sorted, signed us up, their record company signed us up, and then the rest is history.
Yeah.
And of course, we toured with them again over the years.
We've done loads of tours.
Yeah,
the last one.
Yeah.
We were on their very first major one, and we were on their last 40th anniversary one as well. So
we did three in 12 years.
Yeah.
I think it was that.
Mm. How did that feel, the first one compared to the last one now with its...
Well, the first one, of course, was like we didn't know what the hell was going on. We weren't used to be playing such, you know, big places and everything. Or nor were they, because it was, again, their first major tour. And of course, it was all new and exciting and everything. So, yeah, it was great. Really great fun, yeah. Mm. And we were all really young and just used to get up to... Can't even go there, what we used to get up to.
Yeah, in those days. And that last one was interesting because we landed in Paris on the day of the bomb.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It started off really well.
Yeah. The morning after the Bataclan.
The morning after.
Yeah. And we were told to drive there. Lemmy still wanted to do the gig.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, of course, the city shut down for a few days. Yeah. But no, he still wants to do the gig.
Well, yeah, of course, you know, because he said, you have to carry on. But before. Basically, we couldn't do it because the three days of thingy. But, so that was a really awful, obviously, time. But, obviously, by this time, though, Motorhead got so big, or Lemmy had got so big, so... The difference of the venues between obviously the first tour,
massive.
40 years earlier, and the ones that we just did. You know, we were playing Munich, wasn't it? Two nights, 8,000 each sold out.
Stockholm was 12,000.
No, it was one of 12,000 we did.
That was Stockholm.
Yeah, massive. I think Stockholm was massive.
Stockholm Arena.
And all sold out, you know, so. You know, I think it's because it's Lemmy's 40th, and
I saw the gig in Oslo, and it was it was not just good, but it was also touching because that it was probably the last.
Did you see us in Oslo?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, I was going to say.
I saw you too.
As you can tell, it was really great way to finish the whole cycle thing, you know. So it was just great for us as well to be. And Saxon, of course, as well, just because obviously all three bands were there at the beginning as well. And then we were all there together at the end.
Did Saxon also do the first tour with...
No, they were... I think they did the second tour with them.
They were always on tour with Motorhead as well,
they? They did the second tour with them, I think, So, but we all go back so far.
But you've written a lot of music throughout the years, but still you chose to re-record The Hit and Run. Why did you do this?
Well, actually, it was really because the record company thought it'd be a good idea because a lot of people were trying to get hold of the original and couldn't. But also, it was a way of reclaiming our songs back. Mm. Because basically, like many other bands from that era, we don't own our songs. We have no control over them. You know, they're just...
Dodgy deals.
Yeah. So basically, it was a way of us almost reclaiming our songs back. Yeah. And it was to celebrate its, what was that, 30th anniversary? Yeah. I'm getting confused with what I was saying. Too many years.
No, it wasn't the 30th anniversary. Legacy was.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I mean, of the Hit and Run album.
The
Hit and Run album.
Yeah.
That's what we were talking about, recording the Hit and Run.
Well,
it was 30 years.
Well, that's why we did it, wasn't it? It was the 30th anniversary of the album. That's why we re-recorded it.
Yeah. But you also did that for Legacy.
Legacy was the 30th anniversary of the band.
That was.
We like anniversaries. That's an excuse for a party.
Of course. Yeah. Partying is the best way to just stay alive. I don't know. But what about, do you have any particularly good stories from your career that you could share with us? Whoa, something fun or something crazy or something Spinal Tap-ish?
Spinal Tap. Most bands in most heavy metal bands will say to you, I think, it was written about us. Yeah. It was every single band would say that, you know. So, I mean, most heavy metal bands have their Spinal Tap moments.
Yeah, and we've had loads.
And we had loads. We've
definitely got lost in a few corridors.
Hollywood,
we got lost. Me and Kelly were there. We got lost, completely lost. We could hear the crowd. kept going down the corridors. No, it's not that way. Dead end.
It took us about 10 minutes to find the stage.
And most of the other stories are just basically about getting drunk and falling over.
They all involve alcohol.
Most of them involve alcohol,
What if we just don't talk about the alcohol but just tell the fun parts of it?
No, that's like normally what we do. I can't remember it.
That's it.
Nothing.
So then, you don't want to tell me about those stories. You telling me the coolest gig you've ever done? And which band were you there with, or who did you play for?
Well, I'd say Deep Purple.
Amazing,
fantastic. There were lasers everywhere. It was the perfect strangers tour.
When Deep Purple reformed.
Amazing.
In America. And Richie Blackmore
Seven
was a fan
week
of
tour
the band.
In America. It was fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah, so we went over there. And it was just, it was the first time that, I'd been sat on the side of the stage. And you couldn't actually hear the band because the audience, it was like the people, they were screaming so loud.
And lasers were going everywhere. It just looked amazing.
And of course, it was massive.
Yeah.
Tacoma Dome.
Yeah, like 20,000 people a night or something. Yeah. It was amazing.
But apart from that, with Girls' School, I think...
Best tour ever.
Alice Cooper for me.
Black Sabbath, we played 4 nights at Hammersmith Odeon and we were only just sort of coming up. Sort of around the time of our first album, and they were the first gigs that Dio had done. And it was kind of like we felt like a big band for the first time, probably.
Yeah. But hang on, funny enough, I remember getting on the 220 bus where we lived in Wandsworth to Hammersmith. You could get a bus straight there. Getting on the bus, guitar on the back. Oh, off we go again.
Biggest gig of my life.
How did I get there?
Where's the limo, darling?
You probably got a cab, don't you?
Yeah, probably.
But no, that's so weird, just thinking, oh, well, off we go to Hammersmith again.
Yeah. Oh, and Heavy Metal Barn Dance.
That was
Motorhead, Saxon, ourselves.
Bardish.
Yeah, and like some of the others. Yeah. And it was like... It was 8,000 people, but it was Motorhead weren't.
Yeah, that was great. That
it was just as Motorhead were getting really, really big.
Yeah,
and it was
it was quite an event.
It was special.
Yeah, it was that was brilliant. That gig, I remember it.
Yeah.
Barn dance, not
heavy metal barn dance.
Yeah.
But I keep thinking, how the hell do you get there? How the hell do you get to play with Black Sabbath and stuff like that when you're such a new band?
They kept inviting us.
We played with them in Russia as well.
Yeah. But we weren't just a new band. It's like when we were doing the covers band, and Denise was doing another band as well at the same time.
Punk band.
Yeah. And we were like playing twice a week when we were 15. In local pubs and stuff.
Yeah.
And then once we decided to name ourselves Girls' School and we had an agent, we were going off on these tours around Ireland and France, playing in nightclubs and stuff. And we were like doing 200 gigs a year sometimes.
Yeah.
And it was really... we worked quite hard for a few years. And then, we had the Overkill tour. And Motorhead weren't big at that point. That was a big album. But it was... they were playing theatres, but they weren't completely sold out. They were just working their way up. And it wasn't until we did Please Don't Touch. And then Motorhead went mega with No Sleep Till Hammersmith. And that was when we did Hit
and
Run.
And Ace of Spades, of course.
Yeah. But that was sort of when it really changed. But it was like bit by bit, so the Motorhead tour and then... toured with Uriah Heep
do you want to go and sort of
carried on over a long time.
Apparently we've got a sound check.
Yeah. So we can just walk into it.
She's got to go and sound drums.
Yeah, we should take a photo with the whole band before you leave.
Sure.
We can go outside.
I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
We just take the photo and after that we can pick the songs and then I guess you have to go for the sound check.
Yeah. They just said it's nearly 10 past.
10 past 9?
Yeah.
Oh, blimey, we've got to get changed as well. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Let's
I just noticed the thing because I can hear it all gone quiet out there.
Yeah.
Du har hørt et intervju med Girls' School spalting under Muskelrock 2017. Neste vekk å spille Aunt Mary og Høst på Røverstaden I Oslo, og I den anledning plukker Jernverket frem et intervju med begge bandene.
Og så under en sånn der tunnel under toglinja, så sklei bussen inn I betonveggen der og knuste frontruta. Og da satt vi og kjørte de siste 10 mila uten frontruta. Og da var jeg meter med snø inn I bussen.
Abonner på Jernverket podcast via podcast-app eller gå inn på jernverket.com. Gi gjerne podcasten full pott på den plattformen du bruker. Det sånn den stiger på listene og spres ut til folket, og det gjør meg jo glad også, om du stemmer på den. Jernverket for øvrig ut etter nye samarbeidspartnere, så hvis du sugen på annonser via podcast, kan du sende meg en melding. Og husk på å følge Jernverket på Instagram og Facebook for månedens album fra Katakomben, diskusjoner, konkurranser og nyheter. Helle Steinkløv, det meg, og jeg gir deg et nytt eller gammelt hardrock-intervju hver fredag. Hei så lenge!